We're taking your texts for best sports movies of all time. There are a couple of good ones on the list, but I'll put a pause on that for right now. I am going to ask my next guest for his favorite sports movie, Salah Wazirouddin. How are you today?
Hey, I'm doing good, Carl. Thanks for having me on, Shigoli. And as you said, I'm Salah Wazirouddin with the Niagara Region Anti-Racism Association, and I strongly advocate 83 as a good sports movie. It's about the Indian cricket team that went to the World Cup in 1983, and against all odds, they managed to come out pretty high.
You know what? I think cricket is an underappreciated sport here, to say the least, in North America, and it's only in North America where it's underappreciated.
Yeah, even though we do have a cricket league in Niagara, so people can watch it if they're interested or want to see what it's all about.
As someone with a public platform, I feel like I have a responsibility to reach out to said cricket league and to raise awareness around cricket. So thanks for, if we get nothing else out of this interview, then maybe we can help introduce Niagara to a new love of cricket. Do you enjoy cricket beyond the movie 83?
Well, I enjoy watching it sometimes, but I have to admit it's the games are matches are very long. But it was this recent World Cup was interesting to see that a lot of Indian fans were supporting the Pakistani team, and when one of the Indian journalists asked them why, they said, "Well, because the British divided us in 1947." So, you know.
Oh wow! So they crossed back over that line to as an act of unity.
Exactly.
Amazing. And so it's I never want to lose those points of hope. I'm going to ask you about a bit of a difficult story that we've been talking about in the news. I think you and I have a responsibility as leaders in our community to help inform conversation on this, though. But Tyre Nichols died 3 days after a January 7th confrontation with five or maybe six police officers. They're saying now I can't watch the video footage. I won't watch the video footage. I won't contribute to that. Not to condemn the people that have watched it in any kind of way. I think it's difficult, but this has been a challenging story. Before I ask you about a couple different aspects of it, is there anything in general that you think the public should know about this really terrible death in the United States?
Well, as even many Canadian police chiefs have recognized, it's not just a U.S. problem. It would be wrong for us to think that, oh, well, that only happens in the U.S. It's a problem right here as well. We've seen people die wrongly at the hands of police right here, especially black and indigenous people. And the Windsor police chief even recognized that the police have a lot of work to do that this is affecting their credibility, and he said it'll take a long time to rebuild relationships. Not that I think the relationships were that great before. So if the police chiefs can recognize that it's not just a U.S. problem, I think the rest of us should recognize that too, that we've got some work to do in Canada on this.
And so that's something that we talked about a little bit on Friday, and that you talked with Tim and Steph about last week is that there's a rift there in terms of what police represent in communities. For some people, they see police and they see safety. For other people, they see police and they see fear. Now, someone out there is going to say, "Yeah, but this is Canada. Things are different." What would you say to people that say that?
It's really not that different. There was a survey done in Peel about the Peel police force, and 100% of the Middle Eastern respondents, and I think it was the same for black respondents, said that they don't trust the police. And there's good reason for that. I mean, if you look at the Toronto police's use of force data that they were required to publish under the Ontario Anti-Racism Act, and 2021, 40% of the use of force was against black people who are less than 10% of the population, and it was 2.5 times for Indigenous. And that's actually not as bad as Niagara, but that's still pretty bad. So there's a real basis for this.
There's been a lot of requests for change. There's been a lot of asks for things to be done differently. One of the things that we've talked about again on air, but I don't think it would hurt to touch back upon, is the collection of race-based data. How much do you think that this could change the situation if something as simple as race-based data were collected on a provincial level and from police force to police force?
One very important thing that race-based data does is at least lets us measure what progress we're making, if any, if we're making any progress, and what barriers we have. It's unfortunate there's people who've been against race-based data, saying that somehow it's racist or that to recognize race as racist. We saw this in the municipal election here in Niagara. Was at least one mayoral candidate that was saying that, and we've seen that said by elected officials before. But actually, you know, the reason I think some people don't want race-based data is because they're afraid of what the numbers will show and what the numbers do show, and that we need to make progress. Before, we had this data that was required by the use of force data that was required by the Anti-Racism Act, Ontario Anti-Racism Act. We didn't know. So now at least we know what some of the disparity is, and we can keep measuring it and see if we're actually doing better or if it's just talk and we're not actually making a difference. But we do need more. We'd like to see, in the Niagara Region Anti-Racism Association, we've also been asking for race-based data on traffic stops, you know, who gets stopped, who gets convicted, who gets cited.
And if there's nothing to hide, then there's no reason not to collect the data, right? Like collect the data. It takes seconds that it would add to the processes to record this information. And then if nothing is going awry, then in a way it will serve to let the public know and let police forces know that this isn't an issue of concern.
And even the critics of some of the critics I've encountered of some of this use of force data. We say, well, we don't know the circumstances. Well, okay, let's collect that data too. You know, they have a point, so let's collect more data. You know, so we can see across accounting for all the different factors where race stands out. As I mentioned the last time I was on a show, when in Toronto they cross-referenced three different databases to see if the use of force disproportionality was because of there was a gun involved or because of part of town it was or what kind of crime it was, and they saw the only thing that affected it was race and not any of these other factors. So let's see that.
Yeah, it can't hurt to put that information forward. One of the other things that I've heard from anti-racism experts and from advocates across the province is that if we collected some race-based data in other categories too, in terms of health outcomes and social determinants of health, that it would show where resources are needed more in neighborhoods. And I want to veer over to our friends on the other side of Lake Ontario right now, where there's a lot of talk of increases to police funding in the Toronto Transit Commission. And so they've started what I think is a good conversation and a complex conversation about are police the solution to some of the incidences of violence in the city that are reported, as opposed to other supports that haven't been funded, like the housing crisis that we're in, the mental health supports that are severely lacking right now, the social service reports that are here, the increases in child poverty. I'm not sure if you want to weigh in on the use of police in the TTC subway situation.
Yeah, it's a fantasy to think that crime and violence happen because there aren't enough police around. And you don't have to take my word for it. Even before the TTC added their 50 additional constables, the Toronto Police had 80 additional police on the subway this weekend, but it was the most violent yet this year. And we in Niagara should know better. We had a shooting in downtown St. Catharines a while ago where the police were almost right there. They responded within minutes, and it didn't prevent the shooting. But Premier Ford is saying, well, 80 is not enough police from the Toronto Police. You know, wants to double down. But since 2018, he's underfunded mental health by $1.5 billion a year. And this isn't just, you know, you and I, you know, mouthing off our political opinions. As an expert, David Cooper from a consulting company called, I think it's called Liberty Mobility. I have to double check that. He's doing a national transit safety study, and he's saying it's substance use, mental health, housing, and hate and discrimination that are the factors that are causing this, that you can't use police to get your way out of this. It's Leading Mobility is the company that he's with.
think there's a lot of information that, should better inform these conversations, and I do appreciate your perspective. This question has come up literally every single time that we've talked about the very, very unfortunate actions of the police and the death of Tyree Nichols. I've been asked because he was killed by black officers. Does that affect the conversation about how we talk about the police violence against black people in the United States?
Well, that's another misconception I run into as well. You know, it's racist not because of who does it, but it's racist based on who it's done to. So it could be white officer, black officer, you know, indigenous, brown, whatever color. It's violence against a black man in this case, and you know, it's, I mean, obviously completely unjustified, not a proportion, everything unprovoked, and that's part of systemic racism. That's why systemic racism, it's not about the individual, it's not about that, oh, this is a bad police officer, and it may very well be, but it's about the whole system, and we're not approaching it systemically if we're only looking at it individually. So I think that is a trap that some people fall into, saying, oh, well, if it's black person on black person, that, you know, somehow that makes it different.
My last question for you, we're down to about 60 seconds here, but do you think there's conversations happening about guardian police officers as guardians, as opposed to a warrior mentality in the police force? Do you think that it's about a philosophy within police, or is the concern policing in general as it's been historically used?
I mean, it's both. I mean, I'm certainly in favor of de-escalation training and things like that, which the TTC is doing and the Toronto Police are doing. Historically, I mean, nobody can escape that a lot of policing in North America, at least, and definitely in some parts of the southern U.S., was as slave-catching patrols, and it was often black people who were deputized to catch slaves, going back to your previous question, but we definitely need to. There's a group in Toronto, TTC Riders, they're on the web, ttcriders.ca. They're saying instead of putting more money into police, put more money into transit service. If you have more frequent trains, people won't have to be hanging around the terminals so much. And also putting in safety doors and other things they're saying we can do than police.
Mr. Wazirudin, I really appreciate you joining us today.
Hey, thank you, Carl. And if you want to look us up on our socials, it's the NRARA for the Niagara Region Anti-Racism Association. And thanks for having me on.
Thank you so much for your time. Thank you to everybody who's checking out the show. Greg Campagna is producing. I'm Carl Doxeter hosting. You're listening to The Drive. Bonnie's going to get you the news. We'll be right back.
Why not stop by Kelsey's Original Roadhouse, where social hour is twice a day from 3 to 5 and 8 to close. Draft beer, wine, and other exclusive bevvies for only $6. Only at Kelsey's, the Original Roadhouse. At participating restaurants, must be legal drinking age. Please enjoy responsibly. Taxes extra.
When you foster a child in Niagara, you're giving more than a roof over their head. You're giving them a home. You're giving them confidence to be themselves and courage to reach their full potential. FACTS Niagara has an ongoing need for new foster families to provide loving homes to local children on a temporary basis. We're looking for families of all different cultures, orientations, faiths, and backgrounds. If you're interested in learning more about this life-changing experience, visit FACTS.